Yumi Steins here. On Ladies We Need to Talk, I speak to women about the big things that are going on in their lives. From overcoming health challenges.
She said to me, "Have you ever heard of the word endometriosis?" And I remember saying, "No, I don't think I have."
To navigating relationships.
I just said to him, "I need a break from you."
Search Ladies We Need to Talk on the Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just before we start, this episode contains some strong language.
Yeah. Sure. Yep. Okay, darling. All right.
Okay, so if you say a few words.
Right now, I'm in the car with Kelly, Jack McLennan's mum.
We're driving around Wando now.
Yep. Okie dokie. That sounds good.
It's nearly 8 months after Jack's disappearance, and this is my fourth visit to the area since then. Kelly and I, we speak pretty much every week, and every time I'm up here, we catch up. I'm always touched by her generosity.
You've rocked up. You've brought me a banana, a block of chocolate, and some licorice, along with some hot chocolate.
Well, you've helped us so much, and I consider you just a true blue friend. You're always there for me.
Today we've got a very specific mission in mind. I'm here because Kelly and I are chasing up an important lead. It means driving around a town called Wandai. It's only about 5 minutes south of Fix Crossing, where Jack was last seen. We pass a sign that's stuck to a telegraph pole. It's a picture of Jack. His warm face beams down on us, with big text above it that says, "Missing person."
So we've been putting them on poles because they're getting sort of damaged on the ground a bit, or people have to mow around them, so it's a bit hard.
Ever since Jack disappeared, Kelly and I have been following the clues left behind. His hat, his shoes, his credit card, and his wallet. Today I'm looking into something I've heard was found inside the wallet. A small clip-sealed bag, normally used to hold drugs. Kelly still has her doubts about this piece of evidence, or that Jack dabbled in drugs at all. But she'll chase down any lead to find out what happened to her son. The place we're driving towards right now, it's where I've been told the bag could have come from.
Can we drive down there?
As we approach the house, Kelly asks me to slow the car right down. On both sides of the street, there are these freestanding homes with well-kept front gardens.
And look at all the homes. They're well presented. The yards are beautiful.
But the house we're here to look at, it stands out.
So see there, with all the rubbish out the front.
Yeah.
Oh.
The one with the smash rear window.
Some of the people in this house have a pretty patchy reputation around town. Some have criminal records with convictions for drugs or violence. And I've heard that at some points, it's been a place where people get drugs and use drugs. I've seen rumours online and had off-the-record conversations about who lives here and what happened inside the night that Jack disappeared. Some of it's pretty wild and extreme, and likely not true. But among it all is a persistent theme, that at some point over the course of his final day, Jack and his friend Chris Duke may have left Fix Crossing and come here, possibly to buy meth. I'm hearing that the people who live inside this house could tell me more about what happened if Jack and Chris were here.
So there's that apparently people come up here to do their deals. They walk up there, so they're close to the house.
Yeah, it's like a bit of an alleyway that runs down the side.
Nice people.
I feel like if I walk up and knock on the front door right now, I'm worried what could be waiting inside for me. And to be honest, without a bit more preparation, I don't feel like it's a great idea. So I decide to wait, and Kelly and I, we drive off.
Let's get going.
I need to do some more digging before I return here. Who are the people who live here? Did Jack really score drugs off them the night he disappeared? And what do they know about what happened next?
They really should talk with the family. It should be a thing that just happens. You're not saying that they're a suspect, but let us know exactly what went on that day, because we're wondering still.
I'm Rob Bergen, and this is What Became of Jack, the latest season of Unravel. By the time Kelly and I drive around Wandai, I've been looking into Jack's disappearance for months. And here's what I've found out. Jack was hanging out with his friend called Chris on the day that he disappeared. We know that around 1:30 p.m, they went to the bottle shop to get some beers. And we know that around 3 p.m, they went out to Fix Crossing to hang out and have a swim. And Chris says later in the night, as they hung out at Fix, Jack just suddenly disappeared. According to Chris, that happened at about 10 p.m. Then, Jack's shoes and wallet turn up in weird locations in the surrounding farms and bushland. The strange pattern of Jack's belongings and the fact that no body has been found after all that searching, it all starts to make Jack's parents think there might be more to the story. Jack didn't seem to have any serious enemies, so what could he have got mixed up in that night? To me, the first place to start investigating was to start with this small drug bag found in his wallet. It provided a potential link, no matter how small, to the darker underworld in the towns around Fix Crossing. So, I had a whole lot of questions about that bag. First, was it Jack's? Would Jack even take the kind of hard drugs you get in a little bag like this? If he did take the drugs that night, or Chris did, did they go to this Wandai house to get them? And if so, what happened at the house when they got the drugs? And is it possible that Jack came back to this house later in the night, after he disappeared at Fix Crossing? Starting at the first of those questions, was this little plastic bag Jack's? When Jack's parents heard about it, they were skeptical that it belonged to their son.
And I went, how convenient. How convenient. So no license, no other cards, all that's gone. But there's a little deal bag placed inside it to show that, oh, I've been on drugs and I've wandered off into the bush.
Like in lots of regional Australian towns, there is a bit of a meth problem in the region where Jack lived. But to Ross and to Kelly, Jack was this fit young bloke who was into yoga and healthy living. Taking drugs just didn't gel with that image at all.
So it was just reeking with falsehoods. The whole lot of it was just not making sense at all.
For Ross in particular, there was another explanation.
Was there some inference there that perhaps this had been planted, the wallet and the card?
Well, they didn't infer that, but we definitely did. We knew that, you know, 2 and 2 doesn't equal 5 here. It's something's really amiss here.
So Jack's dad thinks someone might have planted the bag in his son's wallet. By the way, he isn't saying the cops did it, but he thinks someone might have. And the reason for that kind of speculation is because, well, Jack's parents, they hate to imagine their son taking hard drugs. So the next question I need to answer is, would Jack really have done meth or whatever was in this bag? Jack's ex-girlfriend Carly told me Jack had experimented a bit in the past, but she didn't think he'd done drugs like that recently. To get a clearer picture, I decided to spread the net further and to reach out to nearly everyone Jack was in contact with over the last few years. I send over 150 messages on Facebook to Jack's friends, acquaintances, old work colleagues, and I get a bunch of messages back. Some of the responses echo what Carly told me, that Jack liked his pot and the occasional drink. It's not until I connect with one of Jack's closest childhood friends that I get another perspective on Jack's relationship with drugs.
I'll just get you to say your name.
Sam Gilmore.
Perfect. And Sam, how long have you known Jack for?
Since I was 13 years old.
Sam and Jack were best mates for a time in high school, back when Jack and his family lived over on the coast. He still can't quite believe his friend is gone.
It's just a bit fucked. It's hard to deal with these emotions. It was a friendship that lasted till he's gone. You know, he was one of the closest people to me in my heart.
Back in high school, Sam and Jack did everything together.
We used to say that we're the same soul trapped in two different bodies. you know, we're pretty much like the same person. And I think we just put up with each other's shit. You know, and we always had the best interest for each other in our hearts.
You sound a lot more like brothers than friends, really.
That's what I put my relationship to him with. You know, maybe not by blood, but maybe by spirit.
Sam and Jack stayed mates even as Sam moved interstate for a while, and Jack moved back and forth between the Sunshine Coast and the towns around Fix Crossing. During those years, they were housemates too. They lived in three different places together, and at one point, Sam even got Jack a job where he was working. For a while, the two of them got really into spirituality.
He thought it was a bit of a joke at the start, and then he started looking into it, and he's like, hang on, there's actually something here.
They love going deep and talking about things like human consciousness.
You know, we know the power in the mind and the body, but, you know, what happens to it once the soul's brought into the equation? You know, something that's beyond, I guess, this plane of existence. What can humans do then?
Exploring these interests led them to a whole new set of experiences.
You know, and that led us down a journey of just psychedelics and other things and trying to perceive something we couldn't. You know, and I think some of the experiences we had on that really pushed us towards what we can't see.
Over the years, thanks to life and distance, they started seeing less and less of each other. But they stayed in touch, catching up over a call every 2 weeks or so.
Just to make sure he's going well and see how things are going.
Then, about a year before Jack went missing, the two mates organised to catch up at Sam's place. When Jack arrived, Sam says he brought something with him that wasn't welcome.
Oh, I think he was going a bit wild there for a little bit, but he brought a crack pipe into my house and I just went, what the fuck are you doing?
Sam thinks he'd been using the pipe to smoke meth.
I told him how disappointed I was for bringing that shit into my house. You know, I said, it's disgusting. I said, why the fuck would you resort to something like that?
Sam can't believe it. Sure, he and Jack used to smoke a bit of pot together and maybe dip into some psychedelics, but meth?
Why meth? Why ice? You know, like, you know what it does to people. You know, look around.
Sam told Jack to pull his head in. The interaction stayed with him ever since.
It's completely out of character for him to resort to something like that.
And why do you think he was doing it?
I don't know. You know, I think he was just lost. And I think, you know, Jack was easy to manipulate. Now, that's one thing, one of his downsides, you know, he's very trusting and that sort of thing. And sometimes that was to his detriment. And I think it's just what the people he was hanging out with down there do. Like, I think it is just a choice of drug in that area. You know? When he does go to something like that, he's embracing his darkness. Everyone's complex. You know, we've all got a shadow. And I think, yeah, you know, and I think his just got the better of him.
Sam's not the only friend from Jack's past that told me he's tried harder drugs. To me, it feels like I have my answer as to whether Jack would put something like meth in his body. The answer is, yeah, it's possible, especially if you think about the fact that he's processing his breakup with Carly. It seems to me that despite the way that Jack hid this from some of the people closest to him, the little plastic bag found in his wallet, it was probably his, which means it's unlikely it was planted by someone else, as his dad Ross suspected. So if Jack did take drugs the night that he disappeared, part of me wonders if he just got lost and ran into some trouble in the bush. But the problem with that theory is that police and the entire community did a massive search of the area. There were drones, divers, dogs, more than 160 people searching over 10 days. They still didn't find Jack, or his phone, or his driver's license. And the family and their supporters, they're still out there searching. They still haven't found anything. So it makes sense to me to look into where else he might have gone that night and what else he could have got caught up in. Which leads me to the next of my questions, where they got the drugs.
The thing I don't understand, you know, you look at these dealers in Wandai, you know, like everyone in the town knows who these people are.
It makes sense to ask those people more questions about what they know. For all we know, they might have more information about where Jack went and who else he spoke to that night. They moved in a very different world to most people in the region. Maybe they know about something else Jack got caught up in. Maybe they saw or overheard the beginning of a phone call, some weird behaviour, an argument, a conversation, something Jack was involved in at the house.
I don't know what's happened, but I think something's gone down at the drug dealers.
It seems like if I want to know the answers to my next questions, I'm going to have to find the people who were in it the night that Jack disappeared. It doesn't take long for me to start finding out their names. The first is a woman called Twyla. She's in her mid-30s and grew up in the towns around Wandai. I find a number and do my best to get her on the phone.
Hi, Twyla. It's Rob Bergen calling from ABC Radio. I wanted to see if I could organise a chat at some stage.
Twyla tells me she doesn't want to talk and that she's going to get advice from a lawyer.
All right. Is there a better time to call you back?
Then she hangs up.
Hello?
I call Twyla a couple more times in the weeks after, but she doesn't pick up. Strangely, people online start naming her dad and suggest that as he's Twyla's dad, he knows more about what happened to Jack than he's letting on. I reach out to him. At first, he's reluctant to talk, but after a bit of back and forth on the phone, he agrees to speak with me. What he shares with me about his daughter, it opens a window into a much darker side of the region that Jack lived in.
My name's Neil Robbins, seventh generation in the area. All my family opened up all the stock routes. Yeah, and just hard work and all my life.
Neil hasn't done anything wrong in this saga, but the worst of the online discussion around the case, it started to get unhinged, and people in town have started confronting him based on false accusations that he's hiding something.
I can't walk down the main street of Mergen anymore because they know I'm Twyla's dad and they just want to fight you. You know, you get a group of 10 or 12 walking down the street at you, what are you going to do?
And that's just coming from general members of the public that know about the story.
Yep.
Neil says he never met Jack, but after he went missing, Neil felt the region he calls home turn against him and his daughter. He says he's seen hundreds of alarming online posts and messages.
The death threats for Twyla is just, it's out of control. I think there's 467 messages handed to the police.
467?
Messages, inboxes, death threats, hate hits.
What's some of the extreme versions of that?
Oh, they're up to $10,000, $5,000.
To do what?
To put Twyla on the wrong side of the grass.
And how's that make you feel?
Oh, it makes you want to protect her, go into protection mode.
I get the impression from Neil that when he heard Twyla's name was brought up in relation to drugs and that Jack visited her place that night, he wasn't completely shocked. And that's because Neil has watched his daughter fall deeper and deeper into the dark side of the small towns around Fix Crossing.
Ever since the drugs come to town, the heavy drugs, like the ice, everything just changed. That drug, it's something else to be reckoned with, that thing. And it's getting worse too. It's easier to get that than water now around town.
Neil says Twyla slid deeply into addiction after this awful freak accident when her young daughter was killed by a television that fell on her.
And then put the needle in her arm and that was the end of it.
So you think everything changed in that moment where the TV fell on a child?
Yep. I noticed a change in her. Yeah, she got real gung-ho and I thought, I knew something wasn't right, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And then when I seen all the bruises up her arm, that was the end of it. That was the sign.
Before long, Neil couldn't recognise his own daughter.
They're just not... They're still in there, but just then the lies and just that he's, you know, always trying to hide the habit. I'm always waiting for the police to, you know, knock on the door. Can you come and identify your daughter? That's what I live with every day. Yeah, because it's coming one day. You can't just keep that lifestyle up. You got to come unstuck with it sooner or later.
I can tell Neil is hurting, but I need to go back to why I called him in the first place. I want to know what his daughter Twyla knows about the last hours before Jack disappeared.
What has Twyla told you happened that night?
Yeah, not a lot. Like she said, that they were there, they were all good.
Neil seems to confirm what I'd heard, that Chris and Jack went to the house together.
Did Twyla say what they sort of did that night when he got there?
Oh, they just, he said, he was just a nice, quiet bloke. And I said, well, what did Jack buy? And he said he just brought 2 points of ice.
Neil's saying Jack bought 2 points, as in 0.2 grams of ice, while he was at the Wandai house. That's a fair bit if you're not taking it regularly.
And I said to Twyla, I said, was he a drug addict? And she said, no. He said he was very new to it. And, but plus he did have some of it, and but he didn't needle or anything.
Neil says he was told by Twyla that Jack wrapped the ice in a cigarette paper and swallowed it. It's commonly called bombing your drugs, and it's less invasive than a needle and gives a smoother, more delayed high. Twyla told Neil that after Jack took the drugs, he was in a good mood. She didn't say anything about any conflict or anything aggressive or violent happening while they were there. Jack and Chris just bought some drugs, took them, then left.
And then when they left, they were laughing, walking up the driveway, him and Chris. And yeah, that's the end of it. And Twyla said then she finds out the next morning that Jack's missing. And that's all she sort of said, and she doesn't know anymore.
I was hoping that Neil might be able to connect me with Twyla so I could further clarify the story. Like, what time did Jack and Chris get to the Wandai house? And what time did they leave? And what else happened while they were there? But Neil tells me Twyla's left the house in Wandai now, and I hear she's staying in another place more than an hour's drive away. She's still ignoring all my messages. Neil says she might not know anything more anyway.
Kid's the one that we've got to talk to.
Kid's the nickname of the other person who lived in the house with Twyla, and who I've heard was there the night that Jack and Chris visited. For legal reasons, we won't use his real name. Kid was Twyla's boyfriend at the time, a man in his early 40s. From the ABC office back on the Sunshine Coast, I start doing some digging. What I find is a long list of criminal convictions dating back more than 20 years. They're for things like theft, trespassing, breaches of bail, drug possession, and drug supply. I call him a few times, but he doesn't answer. And then soon after, he's completely out of reach because he's sent to jail on remand for unrelated charges. When I contact the people around Kid, no one wants to go on the record. Some are seriously concerned about the risk of speaking out against him. Eventually, I learned that the Wandai house, the place where Jack and Chris apparently went to score drugs, it's also Kid's mum's place. Her name's Edna. As far as I know, she's had nothing to do with any of this, but she does live there. So maybe she can help me figure out what happened there. I find a number for Edna and I give her a call.
Oh yeah, hi Edna, it's Rob Bergen from the ABC. I've been covering the Jack McLennan case and I'm aware there's a lot of rumour and fact and fiction, etc. that's all getting mixed together.
Immediately, I can tell that Edna is not happy to get a call from me, and she doesn't agree to be recorded.
You sound like you're pretty distressed over everything that's taken place, and that's why I'm reaching out to you to understand your side of it.
But even though she doesn't want to be recorded, Edna and I speak for almost 40 minutes. Edna tells me about her involvement in the community. She's been a member of the Country Women's Association for years, and she's a regular face at the local markets. She says all the accusations flying around about Jack's disappearance, putting Kids and even her name in the middle of it, it sent her into a nervous breakdown. Edna backs up what Neil said and confirms that Jack did come to her house that night. By cross-referencing that with a bunch of other known sightings of Jack around Wandai that day, it means Jack and Chris were likely there close to 5:30 p.m., about 2.5 hours after they first got to Fix. Edna says she only saw Jack briefly out the front when he arrived. They said a quick hello, then Jack walked towards the back of the property where Kid and Twyla lived. I ask Edna if there was anyone else at the house that night.
So who was physically in the house, just so I can be 100% sure?
She drops a few names but quickly pedals them back, unsure if they were actually there or if she's got her nights mixed up. Whatever the case, Edna tells me she's spoken to Kit about what happened that night, and he promised her nothing bad went down. As we get to the end of our conversation, Edna tells me she's open to doing an interview, but she wants to check with a solicitor first. She tells me to call back later in the week.
Okay then. Thanks for your time. Cheers.
For a while now, I've suspected there were more people at the Wandai house that night. Over on Facebook, people have been throwing names around left, right and centre. Some of them are the same ones that Edna said on the phone. It's hard to know if these are real leads or just town gossip, but I need to track them all down. I do my best to find numbers for each and every one, and when I call, some don't pick up. They ignore my follow-up messages and voicemails. A couple of numbers I try early on, they're later disconnected.
Please check the number before calling again.
I do get some responses, but when I press for information, I'm quickly shut down.
Did you see him the night that he disappeared?
I've never met him and I've never known him, so.
I try Edna again later in the week as planned, but she never picks up my call. I'm definitely getting frustrated here. It's like I take one step forward and get this golden nugget of information, but then quickly take two steps back with people clamming up or going cold. It feels like I've got no choice left. I've got to make the 3-hour drive back out to Wandai and finally approach the house where it seems like Jack and Chris bought those drugs to try and get some answers once and for all. Well, right now, just outside the house that Jack visited on his last known night, and we can see there's a hedge that's covering a large part of the front. The tarpaulin that was previously there has been moved aside. In the backyard, there's probably half a dozen vehicles. A blue hatch has just pulled into the front drive, and I think this might be Edna. So I'm going to have to try the old traditional route and see if I can rock up and they'll have a chat. Here we go. I've got no idea what I'm walking into here. I heard there were as many as 12 people at the house when Jack came here. Who knows how many are here today? I can see the front doors open, but the screen doors shut. I walk up the steps and I can see the kitchen table through the doorway. Edna appears from the end of the hall.
Hi, so, Edna, it's Rob Bergen from the ABC. We spoke on the phone last week. We had a bit of a long chat.
She looks wary of me and her sunlined face kind of scrunches as she tries to make me out through the screen door.
My solicitor said, say no more, not interested.
How has your life been since Jack was here?
I don't want to say nothing in case he incriminates me again.
I think, Edna, all you said before was that he left.
Edna disappears, and I kind of just sit there, waiting for a few seconds to see if anyone else will talk to me, other than the dog. But nothing happens, so I head back down the path, and I lock eyes with a neighbour across the road who's looking at me suspiciously. Well, clearly not the outcome I wanted from Edna. After such a good 35-40 minute chat last week on the phone where she was very close to saying that she'd be happy to present the family's argument, today she basically just said to me that the solicitor told me not to say anything, I'm not going to have a chat, I don't want to incriminate myself, and then just walked off, turned around, walked back to the house. She didn't even shut the wooden door, she just left the screen door and the dog yapping at me. So yeah. Driving on the motorway back to the Sunshine Coast, I felt deflated. I'd chased down a heap of leads for the Wandai house and established that Jack and Chris were there at some point the day Jack disappeared. But Kid and Twyla, the two people I know were at the house with him and could tell me what happened before his disappearance, they seem totally out of reach. Those last few questions I had, they're still unanswered. Did Jack and Chris buy drugs and leave the house? Was that it? Did they come back? Could Jack have come back alone after he disappeared at Fix Crossing? I just don't know. It feels like I'm at another dead end. Then, one day, I'm back at the office when a video download link lands in my email. When I open it, I can't look away. It's Jack's mum, Kelly, and she's standing in front of the Wandai house. She's interrogating Kid and Twyla, two of the last people to see Jack McLennan alive.
Mate, I know my son was here on the night he disappeared, so can you tell me a little bit about that? I'm his mum.
She seems to accept he was on drugs that night, and she's angry.
So what the fuck drug did he get that night?
That's next time on What Became of Jack, the latest season of Unravel. Before we get into the next episode, I just want to say thanks for all the feedback on the series so far. Anne from Sydney asked about Jack's phone records. Now, obviously the pings from a missing person's phone are often used to find them. I have asked police about this, but they've declined to comment. All I can really tell you about this is that police did release a map of Jack's last known location to help guide the search right at the start. But the map covered a huge area, a massive radius, which took in the more populated towns of both Mergen and Wandai. Obviously, it's impossible for us to chase down every rumour, but if you saw something yourself or you heard something firsthand, get in touch, unraveltruecrime@abc.net.au. This season of Unravel is intended to be listened to as a whole. If you haven't heard all the episodes, you shouldn't draw any conclusions, because you haven't heard all sides of the story yet.